السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. By the grace of Allah, this is my seventh lecture on the topic of Tawheed and Trinity, or Tawheed versus Trinity, where we discuss arguments that are related to the Tawheed and the Trinity, and how to refute the Trinity from an Islamic perspective in a healthy discussion, not as with any animosity towards our Christian friends. So today, I would like to discuss the fifth, in this lecture, I would like to discuss the fifth argument. We have discussed four arguments so far that refute the Trinity, and those arguments, if I can remember correctly, were, the previous argument was that Jesus Christ himself affirmed the Tawheed, or the oneness of God. Tawheed is the oneness of God. Jesus Christ alayhisalam himself said that I have not come to destroy the law, and the law of the Torah stands. And if you go to the Torah, it talks about one God. It talks about Tawheed. It doesn't talk about Trinity. It talks about one God. And Jesus affirmed that. And we talked about other arguments, such as the fact that the Tawheed is affirmed by nature, by human nature, as well as nature in general as well. And the very first argument, of course, was that how can... This is against human logic. How can three equal one, right? Trinity is refuted by that logic as well. So those lectures are already there. I've discussed them in the these points in the past. Today, I would like to discuss the fifth argument that the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, has made in refutation of the Trinity. Again, these lectures are from a thesis of Ata'ul Mujib Rashid Sahib, where he has collected all these arguments in favor of Tawheed and in refutation of the Trinity. And the title of the thesis, which is in Urdu, of course, is Qasr-e-Salib, right? And the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, the arguments that he has presented in his books and his writings and his sayings, those have been collected in this thesis. It's an amazing thesis. I say that over and over, but it is amazing. So the fifth argument, the way Ata'ul Mujib Rashid Sahib has categorized it, is that the Trinity... The concept of the Trinity is not mentioned in the Gospels. The Promised Messiah, alayhi salam, has said that either clearly or indirectly, either directly or indirectly, the concept of the Trinity is not found in the Gospels, right? What are the Gospels? The Gospels are the first four books of the New Testament. If you pick up a Christian Bible, in any store, you will find the New Testament in there. And the New Testament has the first four books, the Gospel according to Matthew, the Gospel according to Mark, the Gospel according to Luke, and the Gospel according to John, right? I'm already getting into another lecture series that I want to do after this one, which will be a shorter series about the Bible, right? And maybe it'll just be one lecture. Let's see how it goes. But it will be about the Bible. What is the Bible? We'll talk about that. So just for today's introduction, these are the first four books of the New Testament, which are the Gospels, which contain the life and times and sayings of Jesus. That's why it's the Gospels, because all the other books are letters by anonymous writers or letters of Paul. Right? So Galatians and Romans and Corinthians and all these other books are letters of Paul. Again, I don't want to go into those details, maybe for another time. But for now, you know, this is what the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, says. This is pretty much the argument. You can ask a Christian, and we asked this question to our Christian friends. You believe in the Trinity, yeah? So show me where the Trinity is mentioned in the Gospels. It's not there. What they have are statements which are convoluted. The statements that require interpretation, right? For instance, in one place, I think it's in Matthew chapter 28, where Jesus says, go unto all the nations and baptize in the name of the Father and in my name and in the name of the Holy Spirit. That's the most commonly quoted verse. But that requires interpretation. I mean, just because there are three things mentioned there, it doesn't mean it's referring to the Trinity. It doesn't mean Jesus is claiming to be God. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that go and take my message in the name of God, in the name of, in my name, and in the name of the Holy Spirit, which is a normal statement from our perspective. From the Christian perspective, of course, that's about Trinity. And they look for other statements. They look for other verses which they see as proof of the divinity of Jesus, where they see that Jesus is claiming to be God. And they have to put all those verses together and then come up with a formula, which is the Trinity. Right? But the Trinity itself, in clear terms, as a clear phrase, that there is God the Father and God the Son and God the Holy Spirit, that is not found in the Gospels. Right? Now, by extension, the word Injil in the Quran obviously refers to these sayings of Jesus, authentic sayings of Jesus, and we talked about some of those in the previous lecture. But by extension, if you look at the New Testament as a whole, there is no mention of the Trinity in the entire New Testament. There is no mention of the Trinity in the entire New Testament. That's the crazy thing about this. That's a shocking thing, rather, about this. I'm not trying to make fun of this. I'm just trying to say that when you explore these things, you would say, this is crazy. If I want to believe in the Trinity, show me somewhere in the Bible. You know, okay, so include the Old Testament in there as well, because those were previous prophets. Old Testament or New Testament doesn't have anything about the Trinity, right? And so this becomes a powerful argument, right? Of course, Christians would have their verses, but those verses require a lot of interpretation. There's one thing I would like to end today's lecture on. It's an interesting story. So the reality is that there used to be a verse. There used to be a verse in the New Testament which clearly stated that there are three in one, right? And that verse is no longer there. So what is that? What is the story behind it? That is 1 John chapter 5, verses 6 to 8. Now, if you have a scholar's translation, there are a bunch of scholars who got together in the 1950s and 60s, and they did a translation of the Bible. It's called the New Revised Standard Version, NRSV, New Revised Standard Version of the Bible. That's a scholar's translation. You know, you have the Good News Bible, and you have the King James Bible, and you have these other Bibles, which are more evangelical, means that it is coming from the Christian theological, you know, of course, scholars, Christian scholars have written those translations. But this one, the NRSV, is, if you want to get a Bible, I would suggest that one. Again, I'm getting into another lecture series, but that's the translation which is done by scholars. Now, here's what it says in that scholar's translation. It would say, 1 John chapter 5, verses 6 to 8, quote, "This is the one who came by water and blood, Jesus Christ, not with the water only, but with the water and the blood. And the Spirit is the one that testifies, for the Spirit is the truth. There are three that testify, the Spirit and the water and the blood. And these three agree," right? Now, this verse, you know, it has an extra asterisk next to the word three, that next to the phrase three that testify. And if you go to the footnote, it would say, "A few other authorities read with variations. Quote, there are three that testify in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Spirit, and these three are one. And there are three that testify on earth." So this verse was there. Now, what is the story behind this? This is the story of an intellectual. His name was, if I can say it correctly, Desiderius Erasmus, short Erasmus. So it's the story of Erasmus. Back in the year 1515, this guy said that we need a Greek. The New Testament was originally written in Greek, right? I will explain that in another lecture, why that is. So he said that I want to have a Bible in the original Greek. Why don't we have that? Because at that time, the original Bible was in Latin, which is a translation. Jesus never spoke Latin. Even Greek is a translation, but at least Greek was the language of that time. At the time of Jesus, Greek was the official language. right? Like we live in Canada, for instance, we have the official language English here. In the time of Jesus, the official language of the Roman Empire was Greek. At least the Eastern Roman Empire was Greek. So the original New Testament books were written in Greek. The original Gospels were written in Greek. The original letters of Paul are written in Greek. And this intellectual, Erasmus, decided to produce, to publish a Greek New Testament version of the Bible. You know, go back to the, so he had a few manuscripts. You know, some of them were old, some of them were not so old, and he put them together, and it's called the so-called name of this was Editio Princeps, first published edition of the Greek New Testament. So I'm quoting from a book by a scholar named Bart Ehrman. He has written a book, Misquoting Jesus, I think back in 2006. It was a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, and he talked about these things. So he says in July 1515, this is a very interesting story. In July 1515, Erasmus went to Basel in search of a suitable manuscripts that he could use as the basis of his text. He did not uncover a great wealth of manuscripts, but what he found was sufficient for the task. For the most part, he relied on a mere handful of late medieval manuscripts, which he marked up as if he were copy editing or as a handwritten copy for the printer. The printer took the manuscripts, and so this was published. Now, the printing of Erasmus's edition began in October 1515 and was finished in just 5 months. So, turns out, at his time, there was another guy who was trying to publish a similar Greek New Testament. So they were competing. And so Erasmus comes in, just finishes it, publishes it, 5 months, is done. So this and later revisions became the standard form of the Greek text. What happened is that when he published it, this became the standard. This became the standard. After that, Western European printers for many centuries would use that as a standard. And they would ultimately go back to this edition, and which of course was relying on other manuscripts which are not so reliable. The key passage that I want to talk about is this one, which I just quoted. 1 John chapter 5, verses 6 to 8, specifically verses 7 to 8. And Erasmus, when he comes to this verse, so he finds that in Latin, there are three who bear witness, and these three are one. The Father, the Word, and the Holy Spirit. He finds that in Latin, but he doesn't have that in the Greek. So his first published edition of the Greek did not have this verse, right? And what happened is that the theologians, the you know, I don't want to use the word molvis or the Christian, you know, hardliners, they were really upset. And some of them, they started saying, this guy has gone off the track. How can he publish this? This was the one verse. It was a favorite verse, by the way. If Christians at that time, this was a favorite verse for them to quote in order to talk about the Trinity, right? And these theologians got all angry with him, and they said Erasmus has tampered with the text, and he has eliminated the doctrine of the Trinity from the Bible. What is going on? And so Erasmus said, okay, if you want me to include this verse in the next edition, show me a Greek manuscript which has it. And fair enough, these guys produced a Greek manuscript for him. And the reality is that this Greek manuscript was produced just for this occasion so that Erasmus could add this verse in the Greek edition, right? And so his next edition came out with this verse included, which is the only verse about the Trinity, and that became the standard. So whoever came afterwards used this, which had this verse. So the verse about the Trinity is technically a 16th century addition to the Bible, 16th century addition to the Bible, and this is the addition that later on was used for the King James Bible, and we all know, if you have any idea about the Christian world, that the King James Bible is the standard, or was the standard for a long time. It was a standard Bible that was used in the British Empire and in other places. Right, and so this is the story behind this verse, this only verse, and so the King James Bible that was the first published in 1611, right, about 100 years afterwards, and that used this edition. So the idea is that the original Bible doesn't have any verse about the Trinity. And the only verse they had, you know, it's called the Johannine comma. Johannine comma. If you Google that, or if you just Google story of Erasmus, you will find some details about this incident. And so this is the only verse about the Trinity in the Bible. Again, I've actually deviated from the from our textbook, which doesn't talk about this. The Promised Messiah al-Islam hasn't talked about it. The Promised Messiah al-Islam has just stated it as a fact that the Bible, or specifically the Gospels, don't talk about the Trinity, and that is the argument that I wanted to teach you. So, Jazakallah, that was the argument for today, and in next lecture, we'll talk about other arguments that refute the Trinity.